For 15 to 20 million jobs. I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, serving Philadelphia and the tri-state area. And if you have family and friends that live outside of southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, or northern Delaware, I encourage you to give them a buzz and let them know that they can tune in simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Well, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I want to say thank you to everybody that I see in my travels. Boy, it's been a very interesting week. And I want to say that we had a big attendance, thousands and thousands of people there at the festival at Częstochowa. It generated a lot of our good friends and listeners coming out to enjoy the festival and, of course, celebrate with each other. But before I say anything more, I want to just compliment each one of our panel members who were brought up to me many times during the festival, including Larkin, Mark, Rich, and Curtis, and compliments also to our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, because this is what it's really all about, getting that message to the people. And people tell me over and over again, the positive that we are doing, they'd love to see that in the national media, but we simply can't get the media to get off of their kick of trying to knock everybody around. And it hasn't only been happening in the last 3, 4, 5 years. It's been going on for a long, long time. Today, as we mark another day in American history, the 18th anniversary of September the 11th, 2001, when terrorists took over American planes while in flight and directed them to crash into the World Trade Centers in New York. And of course, it killed thousands of people. And of course, it really did a lot of damage to the American people. Many families were hurt. Not only those killed in New York, there was the crash in Pennsylvania and also in Washington, D.C. So our hearts and our prayers go out to the families. I know that many people were marking 18 years. Many people, especially the very young, really didn't have a good sense of what took place. So when they hear about it now, they're just, you know, knowing that that took place in American history. Today is also known as Patriot Day, and we've been encouraging all Americans to remember those who were killed or injured during the terrorist attacks of September the 11th. It's a day in American history that we should not forget, and we really have to make those facts and figures stick, not only on September the 11th, but also throughout the year. Our people should be taught that. September the 11th was not a Democrat or Republican issue. It was a Hate America campaign by radical people who lived to hate rather than live to enjoy life and make it better. I want to say also that since September the 11th, 2001, America has had over two presidents that completed their term, President Bush and President Obama, and they worked, of course, very hard to improve airline travel. And now we have President Trump in place, and he's certainly doing his job to keep America safe also. I have to compliment everybody and pause with the families who went through so much during the last 18 years. None of us would have ever believed that we'd be able to be attacked. When you look back 18 years, it's unbelievable to see how America has changed. I remember when September the 11th came for several years afterwards, the American people were united together. They did everything possible to show their American pride. But I think a lot of things have also changed in recent years, the negativity in the last 8, 10, 12 years has driven the people back to the negative side of things and not to keep all the positive that was started after the 9/11 attacks on America. Well, before I go further, I want to take this opportunity to welcome some of our good panel members. Thank you guys, Larkin, Rich, Mark, Curtis, Henry. Thanks for helping us to make our weekly broadcast the very best that it can be. First of all, I know that we have Curtis Ellis with us. Curtis, how do you feel about this important day in American history?
Well, I thank you for bringing that up and for your very thoughtful remembrance. It's so important that we remember and never forget that day and the feeling. I live in New York City. I live just a little more than a mile from the World Trade Center where it was. And I remember when I went outside after hearing about it, I went to the corner coffee shop and I met people who had left the towers that morning. They worked for Cantor Fitzgerald, the agency that had offices, had a few floors of the World Trade Center. And these people left, not all of them made it out. And it's a very, very, very poignant memory. I remember sitting outside on 2nd Avenue, and there was a stream of people walking from downtown up 2nd Avenue toward the hospitals. They wanted to give blood. And about an hour later, all of these people were walking back the other way. And they said, the hospitals told us we don't need blood. There are no survivors. So it's really etched in my memory. And as you pointed out, there are people born today that they're 18 years old. They have no memory of this. And as it's been pointed out, there are people now old enough to serve in the military that weren't born when this happened. So, and I particularly was moved by your appeal to positivity. We've lost focus. So many in our nation have lost focus, and they're so consumed with hatred or disparaging their political foes that they forget that we are one nation and we're in this together, and whatever differences we have, we're still one family, and you can't compare any differences you have with our political foes with the true enemy and those who really want to see us destroyed and want to see the end of our country. And it may be appealing and romantic and over to dramatize and pretend you're part of the French Resistance or some type of storming the beaches of Normandy when you're talking about your domestic political foes, but it's really not helpful. And that's putting it politely to say it's not helpful. It's destructive.
Curtis, I want to ask you something. How did you see America 4 or 5 years after 9/11?
Well, I saw it as, well, I have to be honest. I am not going to pull punches here. I feel that there were... Shall I name names? I don't know if I need to name names. I think there were political people who exploited the true tragedy of 9/11 for their own political ends, maybe on both sides. I was not in agreement with going to war in Iraq. I did not buy it for one minute. Those were not the people who attacked us, and I understood that as odious a dictator as Saddam Hussein was, he was the balance against the Iranian regime, and he was not responsible for the fundamentalist. He was not in bed. He was actually, he was a balance against the fundamentalist Islamists like Osama bin Laden. Saddam Hussein would have tortured and killed Osama bin Laden as quickly as anybody at Guantanamo Bay would have if he had the chance. So I felt that we were being manipulated and exploited into a war which has proven to be a disaster, a historical mistake. America, though, we were unashamed to be Americans, and we were proud to be Americans, and that was that's the positive side of it. That's the good. That was the good thing that came out of it. There was a sense of unity, and I feel that again, too many people were putting their own political ambitions ahead of what's good for the country. Now, maybe some people were, or maybe some of these people, like the Bushes and whatnot, sincerely believed that we needed to go to a war in Iraq to protect our country. Maybe they sincerely believed that. But there's a movie out today, called Official Secrets. And it's based on the true story of a British intelligence officer who revealed the plot to manipulate the vote in the United Nations to bring us into the war in Iraq. I don't want to digress from what you're talking about into this, but you asked me, so I'm telling you.
But you know, Curtis, so, as we speak, and I spoke to people out and about this morning, people said, you know, we were so united for the first 2-3 years after 9/11. Why didn't the media, why didn't the businesses, why didn't the political leaders work together to keep that unity together? I mean, we're a nation of many races and creeds. Many of those terrorists hate the fact that we are such a mosaic of the world.
Right. And we can all get together.
And we work together, and yet the people in leadership, in all levels of leadership, especially the main media, tried very hard to divide us. Their job was divide, divide, divide. And that's petty, because in dividing us, here we are 18 years later, we're watching the fact that 77,000 businesses left our country. And now we're struggling to get them back. We're struggling to get those companies that are remaining here in place to expand their product line so we can get more people working. These good things have been happening in the last few years. People tell me that I meet at the festivals and at the various events, tell me the tax cuts are helping me, the regulations are helping me, the push for people to have more skilled education, trades, the thing, all this is helping us greatly. We don't understand why all the national leaders, people we're paying to represent us, can't get together and do something positive. They simply can't get together. And on this 9/11 day, I want to salute all the people who really worked very hard to keep the country together. We do have a lot of radio broadcasters, and we have people in various organizations, people like us on American Workers Radio, Mark Andel, yourself, Larkin Conley, Rich Logis, everybody working to highlight the fact that America is great, and we want to keep it great, but we just don't have enough help. I mean, we're small voices. These people are big voices, and those big voices just have disappointed us. I'm going to turn for a few minutes to Rich Logis. Rich Logis, give us your thoughts on this day.
Good morning, everyone. Curtis, how you doing? And good morning to our listeners. And I actually, Michael, I lived not in New York City at the time, but I was living in the suburbs. I was a newspaper reporter for a local metropolitan New York paper. And I was a young old man, I'd like to think, at 20, I was 20, 24 years old at the time. So I remember, Michael, I will say, I will, a couple points if I can bring up on this, because I prefer to think about that, the aftermath of everything. I prefer to think about the unity, as Curtis mentioned, as opposed to the disunity and the fact that there was, one of the most remarkable out of many traits about America is that your so-called ordinary, everyday civilians, Americans, can become heroes and heroines overnight. And there are so many who didn't live in New York City, who were volunteers, who went into Ground Zero, spent weeks there. I heard some of the stories, Michael, the people went there, and I won't, you know, it's not really necessary to repeat on air. I think all of us probably have a good idea of what it is that they saw, and I prefer to think about all of it that way. What does sadden me, though, a little bit, is even though, Curtis, it's only 18 years as opposed to 50 or 100 some odd years, even though it's under two decades, there's already a lot of revisionist history about that event. I don't know, Curtis, perhaps you agree or don't agree with that, but there's an awful lot of changing the narrative and the story of what actually happened. And when that happens, Michael, when that happens, there's a disservice done to those who died and those who volunteered their time to try to save lives. And I'll just leave with this point here. I was wrong, Michael, about something I said on air once, and I want to admit my mistake. I once came on this show and said that you can't fall off the floor. I was mistaken about that. Today, the New York Times published in their newspaper that airplanes took aim at the World Trade Center. Curtis, that's what was printed. Airplanes took aim at the World Trade Center.
I couldn't believe it, Rich. I couldn't believe it.
So, you know, when you, and today is not a day, if I could say this also, today is not a day to indict all members who call themselves Muslims, Michael. It is not fair to ever call one group all good or all bad. So I want to mention that also, but it because that's an important point in my opinion. But to do what this is not the crazy kook at the corner yelling the end is near with the frying pan. This is not a wacko like an Alex Jones. This is arguably the most so-called reputable newspaper in the world, and it has literally whitewashed history, Curtis, before our very eyes. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
Unbelievable.
I'm just going to leave it.
I've heard that on a few programs today, and I said, well, who directed those airplanes? Airplanes. So should we all worry about an airplane passing overhead if one of them is going to come down and be, you know, coming down on us? That doesn't make sense to me. And you're right, Rich. This is the biggest newspaper in the country. And they're making fools out of the American people.
I hope I'm not contradicting myself saying I want to remember the unity, because that is what I remember. The people I communicate with today, they're former NYPD fire department volunteers. I don't want to move from that point, Michael. But
you know, Rich, I have to tell you.
We have to, as a nation, we have to acknowledge the actual history. And the history of the event is that the United States was attacked in an act of war. This is what it was. That doesn't mean that everybody who's of a particular religion is all involved in that war. I don't believe that either. And you know, Curtis, the prevailing narrative after the event, you know, they hate us because our freedoms, they hate us because, I don't doubt that that's true. I don't doubt that's partly true. But in reality, those who would do what they did, Michael, that is, it doesn't matter free or not free. There is a segment of that side of the world that will kill indiscriminately. And we don't want to talk about that. We want to avoid that conversation. And all I'll say is we avoid it at our own peril, potentially.
You know, Rich, I don't know what more I can say. That I understand they're trying to downplay a lot of that now because there are a lot of Muslims who've immigrated to America and all. But history is history. And as you said, we're not blaming the people in America. We're blaming those who plotted and planned and hate the American way of life. Those people in many of those countries want to control the people. And so seeing America be as successful as it has been all these centuries, and also watching many of the people want to immigrate to America, is very disappointing to the leaders in Afghanistan and places like that. They don't like seeing that. So going after us as a country in any small way. Now, remember, this was not the first time they tried to take down the World Trade Centers. I believe it was back in 1993. Curtis, is that correct?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. The Sheikh tried to get that place torn down. And so it took from 93 to 2001 for them to come with a second plan. And the thing that upsets me is when you hear what happened today in the newspaper out of New York, planes. Why didn't it say planes directed by radical terrorists?
Right.
It doesn't make sense.
That's reporting the facts.
That's
rather than shading the facts to meet their narrative or to conform to good taste in their eyes.
Yes, there's no good taste. I mean, facts are facts. And by the way, every person that I know that is a Muslim, they are very kind and good people. They are not the kind of people that are agreeing with any of the negativity that's taking place in these other countries. This is why they immigrated to America, to be part of the American dream. So I don't understand why the newspaper didn't properly portray it. I know that Larkin Conley is on board. Larkin, how do you feel about this very important day in American history?
Well, good morning, Michael and Henry, doing your great work, Curtis, Mark, and Rich, and to our audience. It's an introspective day for me. I can only say that it was a line of demarcation in the sand of history. The country could not, nor would be, ever the same after that incident. And I've very patiently put up with members of Congress who say that somebody attacked the World Trade Center, absolutely refusing to identify them as radicals, radical Catholics, radical Jews, radical Muslims, whoever they were radical. And obviously, and you know, the fact that it happened, I wish it had united this country behind all that we believe in. But you know, I have to agree with all that has been said before. There's just this ominous cloud hanging over this country that nobody's proud of who and what we are that lives here, and it's really sad. Very, very, very sad.
It's sad, Larkin, as I said earlier, and you know as well as I do, the media, the elected people, and also the businesses are all at fault for what took place in this country in the last 18 years after 9/11. Because for a few years, people rode with flags on their car. There were many people that had flags in front of their houses. We will never forget, united together, America strong, all these things. And then what happened? They could have stayed that way. That could have remained that way if we had a cheer leading people in all areas. Businesses to say this is an opportunity for us to expand. Let's do more. Let's get the mosaic of America working again. No, they didn't do it.
Well, I think the net bottom line is, as selling papers and selling anything for that matter goes, you know, patriotism just isn't popular anymore. It just doesn't. It's not a popular issue in this country.
May I add to that? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Curtis. Go ahead.
See, at the highest levels, you both raise interesting points and ask a good question. Why didn't we stick with that unity and that patriotism? You see, at the highest levels, the elites do not believe in patriotism. They think nationalism is a dirty word. The people ruling Washington at that time are globalists. And they were constantly trying to balance. We had this feeling of unity, of national unity and purpose, but at the same time, that was contrary to their philosophy of one worldism, and they felt that it's a false opposition, by the way. So at the very point that we were pulling together as a nation and feeling and waving the flag and flying the flag and standing together, they were pursuing policies to send all of our industry to China, to build the global economy rather than building the national economy. And so on some deep level, the elites and the policymakers were working against and philosophically and ideologically opposed to the idea of making a strong America. It just struck me now that those years after 9/11 is when we saw the mass exodus of industry from America to China, aided and abetted by our policymakers and by the elites on Wall Street and in Washington.
It was a lack of care and a sense of responsibility for the working class of this country. They turned their back on them. There's no question of that. And chased margin and profit rather than the future of this country. I have to mention something really quick. This past weekend, I celebrated 44 years of spending the weekend after Labor Day in the same house on the same shore with 9 couples. We've done it for 44 years, through children, through graduations, through marriages, through grandchildren. The same group has met, and to see the mosaic of pictures from the time when we were all 32 years old and just married, it's really kind of hysterical to see what has been produced on the other end of this tunnel. But coming back yesterday, my wife and I got pretty tired. Before, we would have driven straight through, but we got tired and we pulled over in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. And my wife was driving. I was co-piloting, which is the standard issue in my house. And I said, turn right. And she missed it. And so I said, well, turn right again. And at any rate, I said, what street have you turned onto? And she said, Curtis Ellis Boulevard. And I said, no. Not in the South. She didn't run into Curtis Ellis Boulevard. Curtis, there is a boulevard that goes straight through the fine city of Rocky Mount called the Curtis Ellis Boulevard, spelled properly.
I don't know who that is, but I did not build that boulevard. I get a Google alert about it now and then.
What's that called again, Larkin?
Curtis Ellis Boulevard.
Beautiful.
In Rocky Mount, North Carolina. But I gotta mention something else. Rocky Mount, for those who care, is in Nash County. And we were leaving yesterday morning to drive the rest of the way to Florida. And we were sitting at a red light waiting to turn left to go on to 95 and come home. And here comes an 18-wheeler that came up to the corner and was kind of very, not the usual bold 18-wheeler driver behind the wheel, but it kind of inched its way through the intersection and pulled up the road. And I made my wife chase this car because written on the side, it said, Nash County Community College CDL Accomplishment. And I thought, whoa. We have a junior college in this country that has recognized that truck drivers are not deplorables. The truck driving is a very honorable profession, and that it is now being taught on the college level.
Interesting. Very interesting.
We caught up with it, and I'm sitting beside it, and I gave the high sign to a kid that couldn't have been 19 years old operating that truck, going after his CDL. And I thought, you go, Nash County Community College. You go.
Beautiful.
Instead of trying to drag this kid kicking and screaming with big debt into the elite world, they're teaching him an honest trade. And I was very, very proud of those people. And I plan to call somebody at Nash County and find out some of the specifics, which I will report on next week.
I would like to turn for a few minutes to Mark Andel. Mark, where were you on the morning of 9/11/2001?
Yeah, hello, guys. Hello, Mike, Curtis, Rich, Larkin, Henry, making us sound good. I was at our counter at General Welding and Fabricating. Never forget, when we got the first news of it and went to the counter, seen it on TV, the Trade Center, the airplane going in. And never forget the feeling, unity, which you guys all touched on. It meant a ton to me. My daughter was born a year after September 19th, 2002. So, like you say, she didn't experience it being in it. But my twins were born. They were 8 years old at the time. But everybody had brought together. Of course, the Made in America Store wasn't born yet. But in my office, my big flag, it was given because I always had a September 11th event when I opened the store every year. We had the event, and the flag I have on my wall. It's big, 5 foot by 8 foot, but it's dedicated to and created by the names. Every stripe has the names of all those that perished in the terrorist attacks of 9/11, and we pledge never to forget them. And I think it did bring together, and the patriotism was alive, and a lot of people joined the military at that point. But it's, I went down to Ground Zero. We had people that went down and took from flashlights to everything, not knowing what they needed, just good-hearted people coming together. Didn't matter race, color, everybody just felt terrible, and we were struck, and it woke us up as a country. But it's a shame, like you said, how did we get so divided to this day? So Mike, it hit us very, very hard. Yesterday we welcomed a bus. This is our bus season. We've been cranking with the buses. We had 5 or 8 this week. But yesterday they had a military reunion, the 71st Transportation Battalion, Vietnam vets, all Army Vietnam vets. They were combat vets, so 60 of them came. Like one bus I went on, told my speech, and these guys were unbelievable. But I notice as I shake their hands and thank them, there's every race and color coming off that bus. And it was really hit me, like, wow, the people that served in combat, Vietnam veterans, 60 of them, spent 3 hours at our store yesterday. Makes you think about all this, where we're at as a country and, where we dedicate our thoughts. But, hats off. The 9/11 victims are always in my prayers, all them that were lost.
You're so right. People are called, the everyday American is doing so much to talk about the unity we need in America and getting our jobs back. I don't hear any of the major leaders of America, be they business leaders, community leaders, local state leaders. We may have a few here in Pennsylvania that are very pro. I have to compliment our governor, Tom Wolf. He's pushing more education, more job training, more trades in the schools. But I don't hear it from many other places. This has been 18 years of time wasted. And now I'm hearing all from these people looking to run for president that they're looking to push more and more dependency on people.
Michael, can I may I make a comment about that, please?
Sure.
It's sort of related but unrelated to what we're talking about. I think it was Curtis. You may have, forgive me if I misunderstood before, but 2 days ago there was in New York, actually, there was a Senate hearing regarding 9/11. And there was no mention, Curtis, at the hearing. It had former heads of former heads of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, Jay Johnson, Janet Napolitano, they were there. And do you know what some of the senators said in this 9/11 hearing, Michael?
No.
That the national security threat is climate change. There was no mention of who actually committed the terrorist act. So climate change was brought up in a 9/11 hearing. And last week, if you guys watched any of that 7-hour freak show telethon on climate change at CNN, Pete Buttigieg said, if you guys haven't seen this, I've got an article coming out tomorrow about this. Pete Buttigieg said that defeating climate change may be more difficult than defeating the Nazis in World War II, Curtis. If I had an opportunity to sit down with Pete Buttigieg, I'd only ask him one question. The senators who were at this 9/11 hearing, I would only ask them one question, and it would be this. Do you actually believe that? Do you actually believe that? Do you think Pete Buttigieg would have the courage to look a D-Day veteran, Michael, in the eye, a 17 or 18-year-old at the time who sat in a boat full of feces and vomit and urine and stormed the beaches of Normandy, France, and spent 5 days? 5 days there. Do you think Pete Buttigieg would have the gumption, the audacity to say that to a D-Day vet? Do you think any of these senators, Michael, from the 9/11 hearing, do you think they would have the temerity to look in the eye of a 9/11 first responder? Some of the people I know, Michael, who carried limbs. Do you guys know there's someone I knew back in the day who used to carry a human tooth in his wallet? It sounds weird until you think about it, because he was down there. Do you think they would say that to that guy, Curtis, who carried a human tooth and say the biggest threat is climate change? Do you actually believe that?
I'm afraid that these people actually would. Then, Curtis,
here's what's actually scary about your answer. The only people who scare me more than the ones who don't believe the bull coming out of their mouths are the ones who do.
Absolutely right, Rich. Absolutely right.
You know, I want to say,
because these are the same people that complain that we may have to pay a penny more for sports socks at Walmart, that we may have to pay a little bit more to defeat China, to stop China from imposing its techno-totalitarianism on the entire world. They're afraid to do that. They're not willing to do that. They're not willing to stand up for America because they've been taught that America is bad, and they actually believe that. And you're right, Rich. The only thing scarier than the people who are just mouthing these words for political gain are the people who actually believe it.
But, you know, in speaking about this particular issue, I've been going around to various festivals all summer, and everybody is saying how much better things have gotten in America in the last few years. More jobs, more people looking for skilled labor, more businesses were concerned about getting their employees better trained so they'll be wonderful, you know, in now and in the future. I'd like to see all the presidential candidates practice what they preach when it comes to saving gas and you know, serving the people, conserving energy. I feel that they should lead with their example and go tomorrow to that debate that they're having. I think they should arrive in horse and buggy, every one of them, not to be wasting show. This is what it will be like under our ideas.
All of them, not just the Mennonites and the Amish. You want everybody to be in a horse
everyone.
And buggy.
I want Bernie. I want Elizabeth Warren. I want all of them arriving in horse and buggy. It'll save gas, and they'll lead by example. What are they talking about? Instead of them saying, let's do the best that we can with the great America that we've created with all the intelligence and technology, let's make it so that our air is cleaner. And our air is very clean in this country. We've been having a cleaner air than most countries of the world. Does anybody believe that the pollution that's coming out of the smokestacks from China or any other country does not go around the globe?
But Michael, I have the answer. Listen, guys, I actually have the solution. Let me just say before we get to Larkin, I have the solution to climate change. Take the peoples of the five most polluting nations overall and shoot them into outer space. Done. Problem solved. Just like Joseph Stalin once said, no people, no problems. No big deal. Bernard Sanders Bernard Sanders was at the same freak show, talked about using abortion as way to control population for climate change. I mean, everybody thinks that, Curtis, you think that, right? I figured out the way to get child cancer rates to zero. Just abort every child. Done deal, Curtis, right? No more child cancer, right? No more what? Children. Do you actually I'd have to sit him down, Michael, and I got to ask, do you actually believe that?
But you know, Rich,
I'm not done. Curtis, you think that's all scary? You think that's scary? Let me give you the cherry on top. If an election were tomorrow, those people would get tens of millions of votes. Of millions of votes. Yes. I'm done. Larkin, I yield to you.
Well, I don't know. You know, you really almost have to be dead blind to realize that we don't have it. We have an issue worldwide with climate change. There's no question of that. I mean, it's there. The climate is changing.
The climate, some of it Larkin,
is,
some I want to just
is,
say.
Wait a second. What? But some of it is human imposed. I understand that. But I'm just too flippin' pragmatic. I want to know, what are you going to do to fix it? And I have a copy. It's sitting right here. I've got my hand. I can put my hands on it. It's in a stack. But I have a copy of the Green New Deal. I've read it from cover to cover, annotations, yellow lines. I've read it.
All right, Larkin, can you give us a synopsis of it?
Yes.
Are we going to have to be arriving in horse and buggies?
Well, no. But there's going to be this period of time when she, and I'm going to say she because she's the author, when she takes every automobile off the road immediately, except totally electric cars. And by the way, we don't even have the proper technology for a totally electric car yet, nor do we have the facility to even charge them. But whatever. And they want all the planes out of the sky. You know, it's there's nothing about a carbon tax. There's nothing about anything. And everybody looks at me when I bring this up and says, yeah, but it's your guy that's killing the EPA. And it's not my guy, first of all. I support much of what he has done and what he is doing. And some of it I don't support. But, you know, listen. I'm pragmatic enough to know that you have to come up with an answer. You can't just complain the way they complain. You can't just say everybody in this country deserves a college education. Well, they neither deserve it nor do they need it.
Right.
But that's not it. The problem is that people who hear them say it drink the Kool-Aid. There are people out there that believe this. That's
right. And
my gripe with the Green New Deal is, if they really believe this, the solution would be for the federal government to increase its R&D, its research and development funding, to the levels that were there in 1960, in 1963. It's no accident that the government was funding a lot of the basic research. And basic research, not meaning applied research of how to make a better car or how to make a better telephone handset, but the basic research into material science, which led to the development of the transistor and the microcomputer and the printed circuit, micro printed circuits and integrated circuit chips. All of these things came out of research and development funding that was really blue sky research. And but that's not in there. Instead, they're saying guarantee college for everybody, guarantee a job installing energy efficient windows in Brooklyn for everybody. If you're really serious that we need technological breakthroughs to get past fossil fuels, fine, fund the research into it. Don't enlist in political science classes at Boston College. Go to MIT and go into engineering. Right? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's...
Offer $1 million to the first person who can come up with a redone catalytic converter that reduces emissions another 40% to make it
right.
90% clean. Yeah. I'll bet you you'd come up with a solution pretty quickly.
You know, guys, I want to just tell you.
I don't know, Michael. I'm still sticking with my solution. Five people to the most polluting nation. Shoot them into outer space, Larkin. Again, you know, if it's human caused, then let's deal with the humans. What's the Michael? You want a summary? You want a summary? Well, Rich, we can't do that. Great. Well, what do we do? Like Larkin's saying, we regurgitate the problem ad nauseum. All we do is regurgitate the problem. Great, give me an answer. I'll listen. Give me a solution. Well, the solution is pay more. Oh, so you want to take my money. So the play, Curtis, it's not really to protect the earth. It's to take my money. Oh, Rich, we have all this gun violence. Right, and cities run by the same people. Right, and cities predominantly run by Democrats for tens of thousands of consecutive days. I understand we have a problem. What's the answer? Oh, we got to confiscate. So you want to take my freedoms then? I'll give you the summary, Michael. Look at every proposal coming out of the other side. Take our children, take our money, take our freedoms. Rich, we can't. While we're all on a rickshaw, Al Gore will be above in the private Cessna looking down to oversee us. Not interested, Michael. Thanks.
Tomorrow, you know what, guys? Tomorrow, I am going to, you know who could get a lot of publicity tomorrow? The person who arrives at the debates in a horse and buggy. And I'm not kidding about that. You know, Curtis, I think that would be a great suggestion. I mean, could you see Bernie or any of them getting out of the horse and buggy to make a point of how important climate change? And I mean one of those horse and buggies that there's no diaper for the horse. You know what I'm saying? So they
Michael,
really
Michael, nobody on this show
of what they're doing.
I'm going to speak for everyone for a moment, which I don't like to do. No one on this show is in favor of harming the earth, right? Curtis, Larkin, Mark, Michael, all of us, Henry,
hopefully
our sweet boy, Henry, we need your. I almost forgot, Henry. We need your vote for 2020. You're a swing voter in a swing state. We need you for 20. We need you on board. We're going to earn your vote. No one here is in favor. As a matter of fact, for all of our industry, Michael, for all of our large population, et cetera, the United States is actually one of the least polluting nations in the world. We're not perfect. We need to do, but sure, Larkin, but we're one of the least polluting nations for our industry compared to what per capita
Absolutely.
around the world. That's a fact. You got to work within the fact. Don't come to me. If you want to have a discussion, open with that. Look, I know we're doing pretty good, but where can we do better? All right, I'll listen. Well, what is your answer? Well, we need to take this and we need to charge more for that. So you want to take my money? That's the real play. Isn't it?
So
sounds like that's
so
me, Mark.
And I want to add to that, that so many people have beat me up in political conversations about, well, if you really believe this and you really believe that, then your party would not, you know, keep on stripping the EPA. EPA, in me, I would put in my reorganization right behind the Department of Education. The EPA has done nothing. They have accomplished nothing. They charge us huge amount of monies to keep the agency open, and their accomplishments can be counted on one hand, minus my picker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that simple. So if you attack the EPA, you're attacking the environment. No, you're not attacking the environment. What you need to do is get pragmatic and come back with an agency that does something other than pass regulations and say, all of these emission problems that we're having are the fault of industry, every one of them. Now, come on, wake up.
Well, as I said earlier, guys, if we have good regulations in America to, you know, care for our smokestacks and everything else that we're using, other countries do not have those regulations. So that pollution goes all around the world. And until everyone's operating in the same manner, nothing is going to change. And regarding climate change, I've seen over the years the climate go up and down. If you look at history, that we've had periods of very bad heat, very bad coolness over the summers. So the climate does change. I agree that some of it is caused, some of the pollution and all is caused by the people. But no one is bringing a solution. All they're trying to do is take away things, stop this, stop that. What's actually causing the problems here in the United States of America and around the world? Let's talk about those things. Mark, I have to bring you in on this. At the few festivals that took place in the last 2 weeks, many people wanted to compliment Larkin, Rich, Mark, Curtis, Henry, over and over again, because this is where they hear some common sense and have a few smiles as well. People also are telling me, Michael, why can't the elected people, the businesses, and also the American public do something to raise the prestige of the trades and the industrial arts, as Mark has been talking about for so long? That would really help a lot. Stop talking about getting a college education, which leads to a sheepskin, which also leads to nowhere in many cases, but paying off the college debt for years. How are we going to talk to these people running for president to restore the prestige of the trades as we had them 30, 40, 50 years ago? Mark, you have any suggestion?
Yeah, you know, it's funny I bring it up. Don Buckner, we got to give it up to, not only with this major event coming up in 21 days, Mike, but he's looking to write a grant to the Consumer Education Commerce Department to teach and educate the importance of buying American-made products. I think it's a great idea. Educate and raise awareness. Even the buses I come in, everyone that I tell them I'm going with steel toe boots and jeans and a shirt talking to these kids at high schools and colleges, they love the idea of getting metal shops, wood shops back in the schools. They all recognize the problem, and these buses come from every state. The stigma has to be lifted, Mike, and I think it is. I think it's coming along. It could go faster, but everybody knows the economy is doing good. We have no workers. Even the food truck, Mikey D, that brings the food truck to my store, he can't find anybody to work. There's such a problem in this problem, not only skilled workers, finding workers. And, you know, it's a culture change we need. So, Mike, how do we get that? But good people, yourself and this show, we need to keep talking about it.
And everyone is talking about the importance of exposing America's young people to every type of job possibility possible.
I have a quick anecdote, Michael.
They got to know who they want to be before they get to the cliff. And
I've got an anecdote for Mark. Mark, your influence last night, I want to tell you about it. Though your name didn't come up, though your business didn't come up, I thought about you the entire time. I was at an event last night where I met Martin Luther King's niece, Alveda King, and a guy named Nick Adams. He's a published author. He's on Fox and some other places. He's contributor. He's from Australia. He's an American citizen. He immigrated legally. That's his whole story. Now he does a lot of youth connected work, both of them. So you have one, a civil rights leader, niece, and then another who's a media commentator, does a lot about youth outreach. And both of them, Mark, both of them spoke about, what did they talk about, Rich? You know what they both spoke about? Made in America, skilled trades.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah, that's,
that's your Mark. That's your influence, Mark. I know they maybe you're, I didn't get a chance to speak to him long after, so I didn't ask him. Do you know Mark Andel? No, I'm not sure who he is. How do you not know Mark? But I'm telling you, that's your influence right there. Whether
I wanted to say one thing, Mike. I forgot this week. So we've been pushing a lot. I'm on about six school boards, pushing skilled trades and talking to teachers and other businesses, tying the two together. And but I went to Alden Schools, which is right outside Western New York, about 20 minutes from my from Buffalo. But anyways, all the schools not only had the trade fairs, the trade shows, had me in every year, and had worker stations, so maybe 100 businesses would come in, the kids could walk around and talk to the business owners to see what they want to do in life. But they're the first school in New York State, maybe the country, that have Bulldog Manufacturing is the name of it. They're manufacturing their own product from that school. The school will stay open throughout the summer, except for 2 weeks, and the kids that come into the class, you've got marketers, designers, the artists. Everybody has a part in making a product, designing it, concept, and building it, and trying to sell it as a product at a perceived value, and merchandise it. Of course, I'm with them, and I'm going to offer the stores to help them get it off the ground. But I think it's a great step. The legalities to pull that off were unbelievable. I just talked to the teachers, but it'll be the first school to actually manufacture a product by the students and try to sell it.
You're right, Mark. You know, one
Thanks,
of the things
that,
it's awesome.
It's wonderful to hear. This is what it is. Our supporters fully understand that businesses need skilled workers, from inventing new products to increasing technology to the actual production. Why can't the big people in America, the businesses, the elected people, the community organizations, the school boards, all get together? I don't understand it. We got to talk about this next week, and I'd like to talk more about the great event coming up in early October, which we'll be promoting here on the broadcast. Let's talk about that next week. I hate to say, but as you can see by the clock on the wall, September the 11th is coming to a broadcast as far, and as far as American Workers Radio is considered. I want to say thank you for helping us to remember this important day in American history. Let's not forget. Let's try to get the unity that America experienced back in 2001 and 2 and 3 back again. Let's get people talking to each other, working with each other, and make America the way it should be. My thanks once again to Larkin Conley, Rich Logis, Mark Andel, and also Curtis Ellis, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. My best wishes to everyone at the station. Best wishes to all of you. May God bless all of you, and may God bless America. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I wish you and yours the very best.
The preceding program, the Polish American Radio Show, was brought to you by Polish American Radio.